The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Hello, Anthony Reich. How are you?
Good afternoon, Kathy and Simon. Pretty good, thank you. Just a little wet here in Israel. The rain doesn't stop. Been raining again today. Lots and lots of rain, flooding everywhere. We need the rain, but this is like a lot. Yeah. And it seems to not be stopping anytime soon, that's for sure.
How's the Kinneret doing?
The Kinneret is filled up. Would you believe that the level of the Kinneret now is already beyond what it was at the beginning of last summer? So we've already filled up more water over the current rainy season than what was used from the Kinneret during all of last summer. Now, we should bear in mind that what was used last summer was probably almost the lowest amount in a long time, because obviously the use of water from the Kinneret has been supplemented by all this desalination that we've got going on. So the usage went down quite dramatically, and whatever was used has already been replenished. So we live in hope that the levels of the Kinneret could maybe get nearer to, you know, the level where we can say the Kinneret is full, and they could possibly even open those sluice gates to allow water to flow down towards the Dead Sea. That would be really a magical moment, which hasn't happened for quite some time. But I think we've got something like just under 2 meters still of height to fill up in the Kinneret before we can get to the time that the sluice gates will be opened and the overflow will be allowed to flow down the Jordan River towards the Dead Sea.
That would be incredible. I mean, considering that water is not a natural resource in Israel. You literally have to manufacture.
Water is not a natural resource, and look at what we do now. We're manufacturing water. We're literally taking seawater and desalinating it to allow us to be able to use it both for residential and industrial agricultural purposes. A lot of drain water and water that flows down off the streets and things like that is being recycled and cleaned up to be used also for agriculture, mostly agriculture and industrial purposes. So, yeah, I mean, water is a big deal and a big industry here. The unfortunate side, of course, is that the desalinated water costs us a lot more than the natural rainwater. But that's the price that you have to pay, because, you know, we can't afford to be without water, obviously.
Anthony, what's also a big deal is President Trump's deal of the century. Is that ever going to be published? And if so, when?
And why the delays?
Yes.
Well, what fascinates me is, having delayed it up until this point, why are we all of a sudden now getting message that he is deliberating very hard as to whether he should to release it in the coming days or not? And, you know, what are the considerations? What would the advantage be to releasing it now, as opposed to having possibly thought about releasing it previously? Now, what's interesting about what's going on in the U.S. is it's quite similar to Israel in some respects, which is that both Israel and the U.S. have got leaders who are currently under legal investigation and also are subject to election processes over the course of the next while. And certainly President Trump's thoughts will be going towards his re-election, or the U.S. presidential election later this year, and of course to the Israeli third round of the elections, which is due to take place in March of this year. I think that Trump is probably thinking to himself, I did promise this deal of the century when I first took office. It's now more than 3 years later. I still haven't released it. In order to be able to show that I've done what I said I was going to do, maybe now would be a good time to release it, even though it won't seem to go anywhere and it won't seem to really play much of a role or be very influential in anything. But I think that there's also a consideration as to whether he might be seen to be meddling in the Israeli election process, and whether the release of this deal may be seen to be helping Prime Minister Netanyahu or not. We understand that Jared Kushner is due to be in Davos over the next few days, where they're having the World Economic Forum meeting, and that he wants to talk about the deal of the century with some of those people who are due to be in Davos. And of course, Jared will also be in Israel later in the week, where we will be having the Holocaust memorial ceremony on Thursday, where all of those senior leaders from around the world will be gathering, and Jared Kushner, along with U.S. President, Vice President Mike Pence, will also be visiting Israel. So I don't really see what value there is right now in releasing this deal of the century, but apparently it's coming under serious consideration for release.
Amazing. Anthony, Israel has been ranked in the top 10 most powerful countries in the world. So who did the ranking? How was it ranked? On what basis? Yeah, give us all the details.
I mean, was this something that surprised you guys, or did you think, yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me? I don't know. I was a little surprised, I have to tell you.
You know why we're surprised, Anthony? Because often when people say, you know, Jews are very effective in the world, you know, we say, don't say that. It's anti-Semitic.
Well, I don't know. I mean, look, this is a ranking that's published by the U.S. News and World Report.
8 million people.
And apparently,
nothing.
Apparently the rankings are based upon political, economic and military power. Those are the three main factors. And so obviously the US is number one on the list. There's a no-brainer. And obviously Russia is number two on the list. That's also pretty much a no-brainer. And number three on the list, interestingly, is China. And again, because of pure population, I guess, probably comes as no real surprise that China is the third most influential country. Fourth on the list is Germany. Again, probably no surprise. Fifth is the UK. Sixth is France. Seventh is Japan. And eighth is Israel.
Okay, so is this the most influential or the most powerful?
Well, I think the two are really linked to each other. This is officially called the most powerful.
Yeah.
But I think that influence is part of power, isn't it? I mean, it's got to do with economic and military, and all kinds of other influences that you know countries might have. Interestingly, ninth is South Korea and tenth is Saudi Arabia. I was a little surprised because I would think that, you know, there are potentially other countries. I mean, for example, Turkey was number 16. Australia turned out to be number 15 on this list. I was surprised that Israel came immediately after a country, let's say like Japan, which has a lot of political stability and it's got strong economic influences and it's got friendships with a lot of countries around the world and it's got huge population and it's got technology and it's got all, you know, amazing things.
But Anthony,
and then
hold
you
on
put
a second.
Israel right next to that.
Okay, but hold on. If you're talking power and military power, that's very different to influence. You know, if you look at the fact that Pentium and all the products that are developed and manufactured in Israel, they go out to the rest of the world. That makes them more influential.
Well,
so that's why maybe they are different. I mean, and then I'd put Israel even higher up the list. But that's just me.
I think, you know, the way that this is constructed almost equates power to influence. It talks about the most powerful countries, but it does talk about the influence of the nation and how it has military, economic and political power. And again, I mean, I do understand that Israel has managed to create a lot of influence in terms of the technology and in terms of military power, and in terms of strong economy. I do understand all of that. And obviously I live that every day. It still surprised me to see Israel on that list in that position. That was just me. And I think my main reason for being surprised is because we're just a small country. And so, you know, for example, you get countries like India and China whose power arises from their sheer population. Japan, I guess, also has some influence about its, you know, the population has a huge amount of influence. The US, Russia, these are countries with massive populations. And yet Israel is just a tiny little country with a very, very small population. And yet still on that top 10 list at position number 8. I can't help feeling surprised.
Fascinating.
Anthony, we have to take news headlines. Is there any way you'd agree to stay with us for the next 3 minutes? Because I really want to discuss your bridge over the Ayalon Highway in Tel Aviv.
I can stay for the next 3 minutes and just for a short period after that. And I'd be happy to talk about this
promise.
New bridge
three minutes
over
tops.
The Ayalon, because it's a fascinating story. So go ahead, yes.
David,
thank you so much.
Half past, give us the news.
In your headlines this hour, Knesset Speaker allows for vote on Netanyahu immunity. Nama Ishar pardon to be discussed in meeting between Putin and Netanyahu, and Iran threatens to withdraw from the 1917 Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. For these stories and more, catch the next news bulletin at 6 p.m.
Thank you so much. And if you've just tuned in, then we are speaking to Anthony Reich. He is an Israel correspondent, and you can catch him usually at 7:45 on the Morning Mayhem with Howard Feldman, and he's standing in for Rolene Marks.
And the story is just so interesting because I've seen it nowhere, Anthony. So apparently a controversial pedestrian bridge that crosses the Ayalon Highway in Tel Aviv has been opened. Why is the bridge controversial?
Well, the bridge is controversial mostly because of the fact that it had to be constructed on Shabbat. That is the main reason why it's so controversial. Think about this. This is the main arterial highway that runs through Tel Aviv. It connects a north and south areas of Tel Aviv. That's the main airway which people would travel from the northern part of Tel Aviv to south, and effectively connects the northern part of Israel to the southern part of Israel through Tel Aviv. And so in order to construct this pedestrian bridge, which is called the Yehudit Bridge, it was deemed necessary to close the Ayalon at least at certain times. And closing the Ayalon, of course, comes with huge amounts of traffic chaos. And so therefore, it was decided that that would be done on Shabbat in order to try to prevent too much traffic chaos, but obviously with Shabbat being a much quieter day on the roads and on the Ayalon Highway in particular. And so this really courted a lot of controversy, and there were many protests, and there was political upheaval as a result of the decision to construct this bridge over Shabbatot over a number of weeks in order to prevent too much traffic chaos on the highway. And, you know, everybody will have their say about whether this is the right or the wrong thing to do. But be that as it may, this makes up now the 10th bridge that crosses the Ayalon Highway. It is the only bridge that is dedicated to pedestrians and, of course, to bicycles, because bicycles and scooters and electronic means of transport are now the order of the day in Tel Aviv. And it's also quite near where a light rail station is due to be built. So this bridge is expected to carry a very, very substantial volume of traffic from the east part of Tel Aviv, from the Givatayim, Ramat Gan area, across towards the central part of Tel Aviv onto the western side of the Ayalon Highway. And finally, the bridge has been opened. It's a very interesting kind of twisty-twirly design, which also makes for some interest and controversy. But apparently, it's not going to be the last bridge that is constructed over the Ayalon, which will be a pedestrian-only and bicycle-only bridge in order to encourage people to be walking and to using alternative means of transport.
That's really interesting. So would it be boycotted by the very religious community because it was so-called born in sin, or, you know, it's built up there?
I haven't seen any words. I haven't seen any threats about boycotting the bridge itself. And I suppose the question is, you know, what happens to the religious community who live in areas which are not in Israel and use infrastructure which has obviously been constructed on Shabbat? I think the controversy really surrounds whether Jews were required to be employed on Shabbat to do work as opposed to non-Jews. I didn't see any comments that the religious community will boycott it, but it certainly was very, very controversial as indeed while it was being constructed.
It's very interesting. I mean, Anthony, you know that in Israel all the eggs are date stamped, date and time stamped.
I do.
The reason is because you cannot eat an egg laid on Shabbat. Did you know that, Sam?
No, I did not know.
Now that you've gone to Shul, I thought that I should tell you. But in the diaspora, where they don't date stamp eggs, you just eat the eggs that you buy.
Yes.